Thank you, and thank you for allowing the department and the insurance fraud prosecutor the opportunity. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to address the very important issues in this case. I know we've been here a long time, and I don't want to repeat what's been said either by counsel or in our briefs. I just really wanted to highlight a couple of points that may not have been talked about so far. First of all, our main argument is that under the text of the two statutory schemes, there is no limitation on the actions under the Insurance Fraud Prevention Act. And the 1998 legislation did not limit Insurance Fraud Prevention Act court cases to the PIP arbitration process that we've been discussing. In fact, in 1998, when the legislature amended ACRA, it also amended the Fraud Act. So that would have been the perfect opportunity at that point to make the change that the defendant's counsel are advocating here, which did not happen. So what's happened over the last 30 years? So the department issued regulations. They were approved by the courts. They were challenged in some respects. They were approved. Forthright is the current arbitration company that administers the expedited arbitrations to recover medical benefits under an insurance policy, which is not the same as the IFPA. The IFPA, you recover tort damages, and this court has a decision in the Liberty Insurance Tech Dan opinion from just a couple of years ago, which said that, you know, claims for damages under the IFPA are tort-based claims for damages. They are not the recovery of medical benefits under an insurance policy. So Forthright's rules, we've discussed those at length, more in our appellate division brief than in the brief in this court, but we've described all of the limitations in that process that would prevent a case like this from being administered or litigated in a PIP arbitration.
You heard from counsel on this side of the room that the remedy for that problem is for the arbitration provider to change the rules under which it operates. What is the department's position on that?
Well, the position would be there's no reason, as I said, that the text of the statutes, the case law since 1998 does not support the proposition that everybody's been doing this wrong for the last 30 years, including the courts, because there are numerous decisions, both from the appellate division and from this court, which talk about both of these schemes. The IFPA has always been construed in several decisions by this court to be remedial, broad legislation that's supposed to allow insurance companies to aggressively confront insurance fraud. On the other hand, the court decisions have narrowed and limited what's available, both in terms of any remedy to an insurance company in the PIP arbitration process. You cannot, and the discovery has been limited. So there are numerous decisions that we would just have to disregard for the last 30 years if we were going to blow this whole thing up, which I think defendants' counsel finally admitted after a long discussion that we cannot do currently as it's situated. For the last 30 years, we cannot do one of these complex insurance fraud cases like this case in the current system. We would have to totally blow that up and start all over again. We can't start all over again because, as this court well knows, regulations can only follow the statute. And if the statute is limited, and the statute is limited, you discussed before the provision of ACRA, which only allows an award plus interest plus attorney's fees to the provider if the provider has an assignment. That's all that's allowed. And that's all that the courts have allowed over all these years. So there's no reason to blow it up. The two schemes, as the appellate division held, have operated in harmony for all these years. And there's no reason to change anything. The Forthright, just so the court gets an idea of what we're talking about, we mentioned Zoom before for these PIP arbitrations, these expedited limited proceedings. Normally one person, one injured party, you know, one accident, It's a one-way process where either there's an award or there's no award. There's no award back to an insurance company. But there's no provision in that limited process to certainly to adjudicate a case like this. When I talk about the case law, you start with the Marin case from 1992, where this court talked about the Insurance Fraud Prevention Act and how insurance fraud is a tremendous problem. And you work your way forward, even in 1998 and 1999, you had the Lopez case, which said that IFPA claims don't belong in PIP arbitration. And you had the New Jersey Coalition versus the Department case, which was a case regarding the regulations. And that said that there's no attorney fee award to an insurance company. So those parameters were set pretty early on 30 years ago.
And everybody's no fee award to an insurance company in a PIP arbitration.
Correct. Yeah.
But obviously there is a potential remedy of fees under IFPA.
Under IFPA, there's a lot of remedies that the insurance company can achieve under the IFPA. We've talked about a lot of them, attorney's fees, costs, triple damages in certain circumstances. And the PIP arbitration is a very limited, as this court knows from the discussion, it's a very limited process as it's currently situated. Here we have claims, corporate practice of medicine doctrine. You know, you have the selective insurance case, which says that you basically can't get from 2012 from this court, you can't get discovery on a lot of those issues that are not directly related to medical expense benefits. That whole PIP arbitration scheme, the expedited process to make sure that injured parties get treated and that there's no dispute about medical bills, that's what this process is all about. The demand has to provide information. It's all medically based. It's all about payment of a medical bill. Forthright processes, and they post reports on the department's website. 45,000 to 60,000 cases a year they dispose of under this process. 60,000 cases, up to 60,000 cases a year. So you're talking literally about a 5-minute Zoom hearing, often with no testimony. And that's not to belittle, that's what the process is designed to do. It works very well from the department's perspective when you're processing a high volume of low dollar claims so that the intent of the ACRA statute, which is to get people treated and get bills paid, is accomplished. Has nothing to do with claims under the Insurance Fraud Prevention Act, which, by the way, are key and essential to the fight against insurance fraud in New Jersey, because despite the arguments that, well, we'll just take the insurance companies out, the department can handle it, the reality on the ground is that it's the insurance companies that are a major part of the fight against insurance fraud. These cases, if any of your honors have sat in trial courts and seen these cases, extensive discovery, often a lot of financial discovery, you follow the money. It takes years. I think somebody said 6 or 7 years on the defense side for these cases to go through the court system. They're complicated. They involve many causes of action, which have nothing directly to do with payment of medical benefits as the ACRA statute is intended to address.
To your knowledge, are these types of complex cases being handled in PIP arbitration?
I'm sorry, Ron, I didn't hear the answer.
Are the type of complex case that we're talking about today being handled in PIP arbitration?
No, not at all. There's never been a case, and I think that was admitted too. There's never been a case like this or anywhere close to this because of the parameters of the PIP arbitration process, a limitation on who can bring the claim. It's the insured, it's a medical provider, it's the insurance company. And it's a medically based and lost wages based system. That's what the award is based upon.
Counsel, are you aware of any case, even a smaller claim where one count fraud claim against a provider by a single plaintiff and asking that it be handled in a PIP arb context?
No, Your Honor, no. There's no, as, like I said, it's a one-way street. It's either an award or no award. So there's no ability and there's been no cases. What has been referred to is if you put the Insurance Fraud Prevention Act into the forthright search engine, you will see that the Insurance Fraud Prevention Act and fraud is mentioned, but it's a defense to the to the claim for medical benefits under the policy. It's not a case like this. It's not the affirmative case by the insurance company to recover all kinds of damages under various legal theories.
Is that what distinguishes Sabato? That it was not an affirmative case by the insurance company? Because I thought Sabato was an affirmative case by the insurance company. I may be wrong. And it was about the claimant having lied regarding the Social Security number.
I'm not exactly familiar with that situation, Your Honor, but as far as I understand the case law that's been developed over the years, that there is no affirmative claim, and I think that's been held repeatedly over the years.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you,
Mr. Block, Mr. Randolph. I know you asked for just a tiny bit of rebuttal. You can take no more than 5 minutes on the clock, please, Mr. Block.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just, I think, two brief points. One, I just want to go back to what's been raised regarding the jury trial issue because it's played an important part.
Sorry, can I ask a question first? Your adversaries say that PIP arbitration cannot be used for an insurer to recover money that was already paid. And they point to what seems like clear language in the statute that says if the dispute resolution proceedings result in a determination that all are part of a treatment or treatments, diagnostic tests or service performed, or durable medical goods provided are medically necessary and appropriate, reimbursement shall be made with interest payable in accordance with the provision of Section 5 of this. And then it cites the statute. How do you respond?
I think I would point to the regulation that DOBE promulgated under Section 5.4b2, which very clearly provides the arbitrator with, and I have the statute, the text here, B3, that the plan, whether it's Forthright or some other forum, must allow the dispute resolution professional with sufficient authority to provide all relief and determine all claims that arise under PIP coverage. So I don't view...
But the regulations can't exceed the authority provided in the statute, right? So how do you respond to the language of the statute that seems to only talk about the only relief that you can possibly get in a PIP arbitration is reimbursement and interest?
I think it affords that relief, certainly, but it does not. It's not to the exclusion of other remedies, including those under the IFPA. There's no prohibition on remedies under the IFPA being awarded.
But there's no discussion anywhere else in the statute, not in the regulations. I'm only asking about the statute. Of any other type of relief, correct? This is the only provision that mentions relief?
I believe so, in the regulations, yes, that's accurate.
In the statute?
Statute, that's accurate. So where I began was just bringing it back to the idea on the jury trial issue. You know, the court has a case in front of it in which you have Allstate, who's made a lot about the jury trial issue, but that's an issue that was never raised below. It was only first raised in the appellate division, and they've never requested a jury trial in this case. So it's kind of, you know, an 11th hour type issue where you have an insurer saying their constitutional right to a jury trial is going to be implicated and abolished, but yet we don't have a jury trial request from Allstate. So it's I don't think that argument should be given so much credence by this court, all other things considered. And in fact, they fought tooth and nail in Lahara to avoid jury trials. And the last thing I'll leave you with is, because I think it bleeds over, is the Endo case that we cited in our briefing. You know, there was discussion, I think Justice Noriega, about whether providers have gone to court to prosecute their claims against insurers who have denied benefits, and they've tried to bring bad faith claims in court. But since Endo, at least, Endo has said no. Providers can't refashion what are unambiguously PIP disputes in court as bad faith claims or some other tort and circumvent the Section 5.1a arbitration provision. So on one hand, providers are barred from bringing these tort claims, but on the other hand, Allstate wants to have free rein to be in court and bring these IFPA claims. And I think it's trying to have it both ways.
But to be fair, my question had to do with whether or not there had been an example of a minor claim, like a one count fraud-based claim against a provider in arbitration. Are you aware of any that don't involve the massive litigation style that this case might require, but just a basic one-on-one couple of counts in a complaint that's that went to PIP arbitration.
I know it's cited in my colleague's reply brief. There is one count. There is one of these small disputes that did result in money going back to the insurance company. I don't remember the exact particulars of it, but that's the only thing I could point to, Your Honor. What I was referring to, I think, was Your Honor's much earlier question to it could have been to my colleague. So I think that's something the court should keep in mind, that how this has operated, that it just can't be a one-way street where Allstate says it has to be in court, but providers can't avail themselves of their own rights to be in court for the same kinds of PIP dispute benefits. And I'll leave it with that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Randall.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address Justice Noriega's question before, and I'd refer you back again to my final reply brief at page 9. I cite two cases which stand exactly for that proposition. First one is the St. Paul Protective Insurance Company claim, where the arbitration was initiated by the no-fault carrier against the doctor to claw back money that were previously paid, and they sought counsel fees as well as costs. In this case, arbitrator Casella awarded back 100% recoupment to the insurance company for monies previously paid, plus $1,200 attorney's fees, as well as $225 costs. It was based upon fraud by the provider. The second case is Premier Healthcare Center, LLC. It's another case. This was actually four separate insurance companies initiated the arbitration against the doctors. And in this case, the arbitrator found that there were misrepresentations made and ordered payments back from three healthcare providers to the insurance companies. So we do, in fact, have instances of cases where the insurance companies initiated the arbitration. They sought recoupment of monies previously paid. They were, in fact, awarded back plus fees and costs. And addressing another issue that came up before about treble damages, I submit that in none of these claims where the insurance company is actually the one initiating the arbitration, do they pray for treble damages? And they would have to do that. An arbitrator can't sua sponte say, I'm going to award treble damages. So I find a pattern. The insurance company has to ask for it. They have never asked for it in any of these cases we cited in the record.
Didn't you say it was your experience that the arbitrators didn't believe they could provide for a treble damages award and that Forthright had advised their arbitrators that they couldn't?
Correct. I believe that's the case as well. And then also I'm adding to that argument that there's no prayer for relief as well. So not only do the arbitrators think they can award it, but it's never being requested by the insurance company. And there are strict rules against sua sponte things being raised by arbitrators. They just cannot do that. So if the insurance company doesn't seek it, the arbitrator is not going to award it.
You agree that the only remedy referenced in the statute is reimbursement with interest payable?
I believe that's referencing medical necessity only issues because it is qualified.
Sorry, say it again. That's assessing.
It's referencing medical necessity issues because that statute is qualified as to medical necessity and reasonableness. And it doesn't apply to things beyond that, such as insurance fraud, corporate practice of medicine.
So where's the other part of the statute that says that, this actually is only for this one narrow thing, and then there's all these broader remedies for other things?
It doesn't say that in the express language. I do acknowledge that, but I think it's implied, and there's no exclusion also. So there's nothing that says they cannot do that. And just very briefly, so I can finish in my time, I don't want to go over. Talking about the actual due process of arbitrations, the insurance companies did arbitrate a number of these claims, and they failed to exhaust any type of an appeal. There's a Rule 24 request for modification, clarification to the same arbitrator that decided the case. Beyond that, there's a Rule 25 request to a three-panel arbitrator panel, and they have to have not been one of the arbitrator decided the case, where a neutral panel then decides the case. And then beyond that, they have 45 days to issue an order show cause the law division if they feel that it's improper. So many of these claims are arbitrated and they did not avail themselves to modification, clarification, three panel appeal process, or within 45 days file an order show cause. Essentially consider that moot. And that ends my statement unless there's any further questions that I can address for the court.
Thank you, Mr. Randolph, and thank you to all counsel for the very helpful, very skillful arguments this morning and this afternoon. We will take the matter under advisement.